It's Daily Thunder, booming out the truth of Jesus Christ from the Ellerslie campus in Windsor, Colorado. To learn more, go to Ellerslie.com. This is episode 5 in my series entitled Legendary. I know for those of you that are following this series, you would expect me to be in the chapel before our live audience, which for the rest of the episodes in the series, that's the plan. But today is somewhat of a special episode. And since this entire series is a tribute to my father who passed away 2.5 years ago, it's fitting that I would bring in Hudson, who also is a big fan of who he would call Grandpa. And I think this has the potential, the setup, to be a very, very special episode. First of all, this is your first time in the studio for a Daily Thunder episode.
I actually just realized, like, the moment we started filming, like, that one blog episode that we did a few years ago, back when it was, like, the blog in the lake house upstairs, you interviewed me and, you know, showed one of my Lego videos, the Joseph one.
So
do you remember that?
You're an old, you're familiar with this.
Yeah, I just realized, like, I've been around the block. Like, I thought I was some newbie, and we were joking about how it was, like, of all the people to end up on Daily Thunder, why me? You know, because if I was just a random kid, I would be the worst person to appear on Daily Thunder, potentially. But I have been around before, and I realized that. My voice was a lot higher, and I was a lot more awkward. So, like, the awkwardness that I am right now, just amplify it by a lot. And the voice, you know, maybe put like a hamster filter on it.
I wonder if in the show notes we should give the link to that Daily Thunder episode. I think that would be fun. So we need to remember that, Andrew, to stick that as a link in there. So I'm going to start this out with a question. And that is, can you give us your favorite trait for Grandpa Ludi? And maybe even a story that sort of helps say that or showcase that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to add anything dramatic to what my dad has already said in previous legendary series episodes. Rather, I'll probably just give a different angle on the same trait, which is just his kindness and his selflessness. The story I have written down in the notes was the last time I saw him in Michigan, I think I was 14 or 15. So in that sort of season where you're sort of, you know, learning how to drive and like in that going in that sort of direction. So he took me on a driving lesson on, it was called the Mule. It's like a golf cart that my grandma and grandpa had. And we just drove around for like hours and he just asked me about my life and what my passions were. And like he said with you, he never criticized anything. He never even like gave any remote inkling that anything that I was pursuing or anything that I was thinking could possibly be mistaken in any possible way. And it was just a really encouraging time. I really felt like I bonded with him sort of like as an adolescent. Like I had bonded with him as a child, but like as an adolescent, you know, him teaching me how to drive on the mule was a very beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. And It was very, you know, like a rocking thing because that was the last time I saw him. Yeah. That was the last trip that I saw him. But I'm very grateful to have spent that time with him. And another one I have written down here is just the Idaho trip. I don't know what you and my mom were doing, but you were somewhere else and we were in Idaho. They lived in Idaho at the time.
We were actually speaking at an event in Idaho. Yeah.
Okay. And both my grandpa and my grandma just, you know, spent, it felt like it was weeks, but it was probably just a weekend, honestly, but it was so amazing. I was like 7 or 8 probably. And, just spent time with them. It was so fun. And when you're that age, sort of just casual things sort of just become like core memories. Like we went to Cracker Barrel and that was the first time I'd ever been to Cracker Barrel and I got this giant pancake and just being with them at Cracker Barrel, we bought Pirate Army Guys and went home and like, you know, played with them. It was just very fun. But the like key trait, like what I'm trying to bring out of all this is just, I felt like Grandpa was just an incredibly selfless person, especially to his immediate family. And, you know, I wouldn't say it lightly, but I feel like he truly showcased the love of Christ to me, mm-hmm. like the attributes of Christ that we all aspire to be. I feel mm-hmm. like he was that to me. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I realized that until very recently. And yeah, I wish I could have thanked him for that and just told him how much of a blessing he was to me. But if he's watching this right now from heaven, however that works,
then... They probably have a great theater set up.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's interesting for my family to be going through this legendary series. It's not just like for me, mm-hmm. but it's all of us as we're sort of just cherishing. My dad passed away very quickly. He had been diagnosed with cancer 5-6 years before, and it was just not really an issue. And then suddenly he had another layer of diagnosis and it devoured him in seems like less than a month. And so it was somewhat of a shocking loss for all of us. It seemed premature. It seemed way too quick. And so we're still, in a strange way, all sort of working through that. But one of the best ways to work through it is by remembering the amazing quality that he showed. So Hudson and I have really built our relationship in many regards in and through storytelling, in and through book writing, in and through playwright writing. And so I'm going to sort of build this Daily Thunder like it's a book. And so chapter one is called The Graduation, which is sort of like going to the end of the story and then working your way back to it. And so it's a storytelling technique. But this past Friday night was a big night for all of us Ludies, but especially so for Hudson. Why don't you describe Friday night, what it was? I mean, just the title of the chapter might give something away.
Right.
But why don't you give a little insight into that?
Right. So Friday night was, quote unquote, I'm doing air quotes for anyone who's like listening to audio, my high school graduation. Why I have air quotes on that is because I graduated 2 years ago. So they say, they say that I graduated 2 years ago, but it was like a situation where it's like, oh, I guess I got all the credits filled up, because that's how homeschooling works. You need to fulfill a certain amount of credits that the state gives you. But it was more so a like, I don't know how to describe it. Like a kickoff is sort of what we were saying for
a launch.
Yeah, a launch, a presentation. Uh-huh. I think, you know, a lot of people called it a presentation and said it was very entertaining.
I called it a party.
Yeah, party.
Some people get concerned about
that. Well, when you say party, you either think that or you think, like, usually when I hear party, it's just people sitting around and talking.
Yeah.
So that's like a normal party that I would attend. And that wasn't that. That was part of what it is. But, you know, that wouldn't have been that special. What was special about it is just, you know, you and I did a presentation of all the things both you and I have been working on. And
for the last 3 years.
For the past 3 years, which is crazy. And sort of the direction I'm heading. So
that's a good answer. It is funny because Hudson did not want to
do this.
And for... if I could say mama and daddy, we're like trying to figure out how to best encourage and help Hudson transition to this next season, which is sort of what this quote unquote podcast book that we're writing today is about, is fatherhood and the role it plays in helping that child transition into the next season. And graduation could be even the title for this podcast. We're not going to call it that, but that's what this is. This is your graduation. But that's part of what my dad did in both of our lives, is he helped push us into these next tiers of functionality and impact in our lives. And that's what we'd like to talk about. But one of the things we featured in this graduation, as we could call it, even though you graduated a couple years ago, it's more of the celebration of that graduation.
Yeah.
And it was also leveraged to showcase what you're moving into, because you are going to be launching into a theater production. You're starting sort of a sub-ministry of Ellerslie, which is very exciting for me. And I think it's very exciting for you, but it's a theater production company under Ellerslie's banner. And we did a show last year, and it was called Commissioned.
Right.
I wonder, we'll probably have to stick up a graphic to show. Do we have a graphic for that?
Yeah.
If it is, it's probably up right now on the screen. So,
yeah. Well, if we don't, then you're just still seeing our faces.
Yeah, you're still seeing
wondering
us,
where the graphic is. So we do have a graphic. So we'll see if it...
But that was a show we did last year. And it was, I think, it was a big step for you, because it's hard to take your art public. It's one thing to have art and, you know, have it hidden, and that's where most people's art remains. But to show it to a public audience is a very sort of somewhat dangerous thing to do. And that was a big step last year, and that's sort of the propulsion into this year. Mm-hmm. Your show this year is called Dragon Mountain, and we actually launched on Friday, the same day as your graduation, a Kickstarter.
Which if people out there, I almost said in TV land. I don't know why I said that. In radio land, in Daily Thunder land.
Podcast land.
Don't know what a Kickstarter is. It's essentially a fundraiser.
It's a crowdfunded. You don't get the money unless you reach the full.
That's value. What's different about it is you don't get the money until you reach the full. So technically, a lot of people feel more comfortable giving to it because it's like, well, if it fails, I don't, you know, have to spend $5, you know, or whatever, however much they give.
So, and we'll be talking more about that as we progress. But there's a few fun wrinkles to this that are based on even what we're talking about today, because it's a very father-son thing. We wrote the script together. We had an actor picked out for the role, because it's basically, in summary, without, I don't know how much we should give away, but it's a very powerful story that is going to enunciate the principles of adoption. There's three adopted kids in the storyline. And this father character, whose name is Joe Hardy, is going to reveal in such a pithy and profound way God's father heart towards us. It's really moving. I mean, it is one of those things where it's hard not to choke up as you're going through this storyline. But so we had a character for this father, and that became complex because he was international, and it was like, okay, how are we going to make this work time-wise? And then we had a fallback, and I think we had two other fallbacks, and I think we had four different guys. And then for various reasons, we ended up ruling all of them out, and that put us in a very awkward position because it's not a small role. It's a very significant role, and it has to be filled by someone that sort of carries this message. And so, guys, this might sound very awkward for you to hear that I'm going to be in a play, but I am going to be this character, Joe Hardy, which in a funny way makes total sense after all is said and done. But you and I would have never wanted me in this role. You included. You wouldn't have wanted me in this role.
No way. No.
And I wouldn't have wanted myself in this role. And so that's part of the, I guess, humor slash providence in this.
One of the like deep into the Ludi lore is that both my dad and I were extras in the, I don't know what camera to look at. Sorry, I just like ruined the whole train of thought. But we were both extras in the movie Overcomer by the Kendrick Brothers. And we're in the opening shot. And I don't know if we should tell people.
Oh, yeah. This, well, no, we should. We should brag about it.
Maybe we should. I don't want to brag about it. But my dad in the opening to Daily Thunder, Overcomer is notoriously not the best performance.
Well,
at least in,
we were
in
there.
Ludi Legend.
We were there for 7 hours.
We were there for 7 hours for
and,
like a 30-second
shot.
I
mean, there are
shot.
Reasons. The fact that they chose that particular shot, it may not have been my best moment, but it's my what my kids call my oh no face. So I'm like, oh no. Yeah.
And that's not a sincere face. It's like, oh, someone like, you know, drops their ice cream on the floor. And it's like, there's a little bit of empathy, but not that much. It's like, stinks to be you. It's not, it's, you know, it's, but when you're supposed to be acting like, you know, genuine loss, like your favorite high school basketball team, you know, has lost the big game.
So my family has never let me live that down. They do not want me to be an extra in any other movies. And it's right above the head of, I think the Alex Kendrick character in that. So if you're looking in that very,
maybe I know the, I forget her name, the main actress, like wife lady. If you look above her head in the opening shot of Overcomer, then
so we're more we're over her head instead. Yeah,
right. I think that's where it is.
Okay,
but
not that we want anyone to
no,
see.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
The spike. There'll be a spike on Overcomer downloads now.
That's how big of a reach Daily Thunder has.
Yeah, that's right. And one of the other things that would be fun, we'll have the link for the Kickstarter in the show notes, but. If you want to see my acting debut, it's actually in the Kickstarter video. Wouldn't that be a
sort of? Yeah. Yeah, we did a skit for the Kickstarter video. So
that wasn't a skit. That was real.
Oh,
wasn't
yeah,
it?
No, it was real. It
okay.
was real.
All right. So that'll be in the show notes. We highly encourage you guys to just check it out because that'll all make sense as we go through this particular episode. We don't want you to do it now. You need to do it later. But let's move to chapter two. So the graduation, now we're chapter two, which is the big boy transition. How do you feel about the title, bud?
Yeah, I was, before we started filming, both me and the tech guy who loves attention, so I'm going to draw attention to him. We're talking about how this is a little bit awkward of a title.
Because you think it said the big boy pants. And I didn't say
big boy
pants.
I didn't think it said that. That's just the feeling that it gives me. It's like big boy pants. It like, you know.
Oh, it's time, Hudson. You get to wear big boy pants.
Yeah. It's like, you know, the transition out of diapers is sort of what it says. And, you know, I don't mind it. Obviously, I didn't request a change because of my of how humble
well,
I am.
Yeah, yeah. And, is that mm-hmm, the reason?
Definitely the reason.
So this concept of being a young boy, growing up into a young man, and then beginning to transition in life, that's sort of, you're at that point where you're ready to consider bigger things, starting a business, you know, buying a home, various things that are like, whoa, I mean, these are big deals. And I still remember the parallel in my life with your grandpa, but with my dad, is my dad used to love to take me shopping. And he wanted me to dress nice. And he always dressed nice. That's my granddad dressed nice. My dad dressed to the nines. I mean, my dad had just had a whole closet full of suits and polished shoes. And it wasn't the type of clothing I really wanted to wear. But my dad loved to take me out. Of course, he loved to buy me suits. That was always his favorite thing. He loved to see me dress up. But I always had a really good wardrobe all growing up because of my dad. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you're in this transition, I'm calling it the big boy transition. It was probably a terribly titled chapter because no one seems to like my title.
Well, someone might out there, you know.
Yeah, someone might.
What do they say? Do your things have like comments?
No.
You could do like comment below. You could do one of those like gimmicky things. It's like, yeah, comment below if you, you know, whatever.
I don't know if that's a good idea with this title.
No.
But I remember my dad was, I needed to go shopping before I got married. And I was in a season where I'd been a missionary, so I'd been traveling a lot, and all my clothes had worn down. And my dad was like, hey, before you get married, I just want to take you shopping. And I want to get you set up. It was this unique moment in my life. And I'm calling it the big boy transition. Again, poor choice of words for it, because I sure didn't call it that back then. But what I said to my dad was, and I called him daddy, but daddy, I need to start buying my own clothes. And I think this is when I need to start doing it. And it was actually really hard for me because I wanted him to buy the clothes. Mm-hmm. But in this transition where you begin to take more ownership, and this is a hard thing as a father too, of allowing, like for my dad to literally swallow his tongue on that one and say, okay, I'm going to let you do that. You know, even though I'm not sure that you have the budget right now to get some clothes that would be great to start out your marriage in. My dad had to step back and allow me to take that step forward. So you can make a comment on that. Maybe your comment on this subsection is just on the title.
I don't remember what my comment was. I was going to say something like, you know, smart about like thrifting or something, or like how look at your style now, something like rude like that. But I couldn't figure out the best way to phrase it that wouldn't actually sound rude. So.
Okay, that was nice of you to then
welcome.
Pass on
you're
saying that. Yeah. So let's move to chapter three, which you didn't like this title either, but I think it's great. And it's called Building the Manly Momentum. Because there is a man momentum in life where most young men do not have a father that gives them the necessary fuel to go on a journey. And so, they head out the door, but then they, you know, run out of gas, you know, a block down the street. And one of the things my dad gave me is he gave me, if you could call it fuel, he gave me so much in my life that when I headed out, I was able to get there. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't without challenge. But because fathers can't guarantee no challenge, that isn't what a father is able to do, is preserve us from challenge. In fact, that's one of the number one things we all know as fathers is what builds us is the challenge. And so we still want to spare our kids as much of it as possible. But this manly momentum. So let me comment on it, then I'll let you comment on it too from a different direction. I want to talk about grandpa or your grandpa, my dad. My dad never said that any of my dreams were impossible. And I, you know, I stuck out some doozies. I wanted to go to this school. You know, I wanted to go to an Ivy League school. And my dad said that he was going to help me go to whatever college I wanted to go to, which is a dangerous thing to say, because then I start looking at colleges. I'm like, okay. And I mean, these ones were so expensive. And I'm like, I would like to go here. Now, he never said something like, you're going to have to get the grades to go there. but he never once said in my entire life that I can remember that I shouldn't dream big. In fact, it was always the opposite. It's like, Eric, your dreams are too small, if anything. And my dad was always cultivating that notion that it is possible. It is possible to do that. It is possible to do that. And, you know, I want you to speak into the issue, because this is an aspect of your grandpa, or the man that this entire series is on, that he inspired me, but not in the classic sense, not in the classic sense where he was up in front, you know, on a stage with a microphone, giving me a speech. It was the fact that he never diminished my dreams. He never curbed my possibilities. And why don't you talk about how he did that in your life as well?
Yeah. I mean, it was less, because, you know, he moved away from where we were living when I was like, what, like four, like really young. So it was like in stints of visiting him. I remember on the Idaho trip that we mentioned way earlier in this episode, he really helped cultivate my love for storytelling. Like, essentially what we will probably get into this later. And Andrew told me not to be moving around here, so I got to stand still. What I'm going into is essentially just being a professional storyteller via the stage, via the medium of theater. And I think he really helped facilitate that, because when I was out in Idaho, one of like the main activities we'd do is creating these Lego stories, is sort of how they were. They were essentially comic books. On his like digital camera, we had like these Lego characters, and I would take pictures of them and then show him all the pictures and tell him what's going on in the story. And then he would make like a comic from that, where he would get like a piece of paper, print out the picture, tape the picture to the page, and then write in it in handwriting what was happening in the picture. In a very witty, funny way, right?
But it was in alignment with what you were saying. So you exactly. were telling this totally bizarre story, and he loved
it was
your
insane,
stories.
Yeah.
He loved your stories.
Well, I involved like the pirates that we bought from Cracker Barrel. Like, they were capturing the hero, which was a Lego guy named Mr. Nice, who had had a knight helmet and a goatee and a big N on his his chest. And nothing he did was particularly nice.
Yeah.
He was just called Mr. Nice for
it's
some
good,
reason.
Good name. Good
yeah,
name.
Yeah, good name.
And well, you had another character.
Right.
And who was that?
So the sort of legendary character, because my grandpa did this with Kyle and Carson, who were my cousins, still are my cousins, but, you know, they, when they would visit him, they made Lego stories with him as well. And their character was Charlie Wong, who he had like this Lego upside down bowl piece on his head. And I guess they thought that was like a good,
like a Chinese hat.
And so picked like the most generic Chinese name. So that, you know, yeah. So I did a few stories with that character as well. And he read me the stories that Kyle and Carson made, which were really fun to read. There was one that was like a Where's Waldo type of thing for Charlie Wong, where he was like hiding in different spots of their house and you had to find him. And it was a big like challenge and stuff. But like, I feel like Grandpa facilitated my passion as a storyteller by giving space for it. He's like, here's a fun activity we're going to do. You're going to take pictures and make a story, and then we'll stitch it together in a comic. Yeah. And, you know, and I just remember this right now, but I made my own when I went home. I like, you know, got a camera, did the exact same thing. And I didn't like him as much because it wasn't with him, but he like instigated that, which I'm sure has had an effect on my creative pursuits as a whole.
And I just think that is such a beautiful thing to see and to think about where you're at now as a storyteller and a very good storyteller. How does one become a storyteller? And it's little mm-hmm. things like this, whether it's, you know, because it's not always at the parent level. Hopefully, you know, mommy and daddy have had a part in that. But
yeah.
this grandpa dimension of your life was a big part of mm-hmm. what actually sponsored this dimension sort of springing mm-hmm. forth out of you.
Yeah.
Chapter 4 in our podcast book, Becoming My Dad.
Isn't now, am I becoming you or are you becoming grandpa?
Well, it'll be interesting to see how you handle that. Because it's funny because you don't really want to be your dad necessarily. I mean, that doesn't mean you don't respect your dad or you don't love qualities about your dad. But usually you're like, I want to be my own person. You don't want to be your dad. And so it's an unfortunate way of saying it. But there are certain qualities. My dad seemed very simple. Mm-hmm. And my vision for life was so grand. And so if someone said, you're going to grow up and be just like your dad, that would have seemed like a massive diminishment of what I wanted to do with my life. Mm-hmm. And yet in many ways, in looking back, becoming my dad is one of the best things that can happen for me. It does not mm-hmm. mean I need to have a small life. It just means what my dad was choosing as his value system and how he lived out his life was actually very well done. Mm-hmm. And so there is one thing that my dad did that plays into this sort of book that we're creating today, which is talking about how you sort of create the push for your son into the next season. And that is, when Leslie and I started our ministry, first of all, we didn't expect to be doing what we're doing. I thought I was going to be a doctor. So I was planning on moving to Colorado and going to med school here. Leslie was thinking of being a nurse. Then we were thinking maybe we'll go on the mission field as sort of medical missions. We had it sort of figured out. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, we have this amazing love story. And everyone wants to hear our love story. So we write it down in a book. And then this publisher calls us up and says, could I publish this book? We're like, what is the deal with this? And the next thing you know, that book's all over the world and everyone wants us to travel and speak. So we say yes to this event and that event spawns 10 more. And it was so grand and we had no vision for it. So we're like struggling to figure out how to make this work. Okay, God, what are we supposed to do? How are we supposed to make this happen? And then I get the call from my dad. And that was, Eric, I'm leaving my job and I'm coming to Colorado to work for you. I'm going to help you do this. And that one thing, I want to circle that and say, first of all, it's one of the most impacting things in my entire life. One of the greatest things I ever encountered from my dad was his willingness to give up his own pursuits, mm-hmm. his own identity as a businessman, and just literally come under the cover of this minuscule little ministry and serve it. Mm-hmm. And so one of the reasons, it's like sometimes it takes a while before you start to connect dots and see these things. But with us moving to this campus, the reason we're moving to this campus is for the same reason my dad moved from Idaho to Colorado. And that was, I feel it's imperative that I'm able to invest in my kids and not just in this ministry. And so if I'm going to do this ministry, if this is what God has for me, I want my kids to be a part of it. I want my kids to catch a vision for ministry. I don't want to just have this ministry. And so that's the reason we actually moved to the campus. And there's this interesting thing that has happened to me. I don't know what the age is when it happens. I don't know if it happens to everyone, where I really don't care about my own pursuits and what I'm doing, my name, anything like that. I actually care about my kids. It's like, okay, how can I help my kids? So one of the passions, as will be described in this next chapter, we might as well even move to it. Chapter 5, building a ministry and business for each of my children. And that's what Mama and I have just decided, is that we want to help you guys start. And yet what we're talking about is sort of that art of doing that. That's what my dad did in me. And now I'm going through the exercise of like, but what does it look like to now invest in what you're doing? So I want you to, first of all, describe your visions growing up. So it's like, if you're going to start something and go back to the young Hudson, what are the things that you wanted to start? And I want the audience to get a taste of what it's like being the dad of Hudson Lee.
Right. Well, so I don't know if you mentioned this explicitly, but what you and my mom did when I was growing up is sort of just be like, okay, we're going to adopt the same principle where we're not going to say any of your dreams are stupid or ridiculous or impossible. So I was like, okay, great. And the first one that I remember is I really wanted to build a theme park in our backyard.
Hudson Ludi Films Land.
Yeah, Hudson Jack Ludi Films
Hudson
Land.
Jack Ludi Films Land.
Which was, you know, we made home videos and you always said Hudson Jack Ludi Films Presents. So I couldn't come up with another name. I mean, I did, but, you know, we shouldn't get into that one right now. But, you know, it was like visiting theme parks. They like tickled a part of my brain when I was young. It was like, wow, people made this. And it's like, you know, crafting an experience for someone else epitomized. Like mm-hmm. it's, you know, crafting a large scale, multi-million, billion-dollar budget experience. And I really thought that was cool. So I'm like, I want to do this as well. Can we build a roller coaster in the black? And what didn't help is we were studying the Jim Elliot or whatever, and Nate Saint, who was one of the guys on that, you know, trip, had a roller coaster in his backyard. His dad
definitely created his problems. His dad
built a roller coaster. So I'm like, well, Nate Saint did it, you know, from Jim Elliot. And
but Nate Saint didn't have our homeowners association.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I didn't understand that at the time, what the homeowners association was.
I used the homeowners association quite a few times too, because I wasn't about to dim Hudson's vision, but wow, what am I supposed to do with this? Build a theme park? You know, it's like, okay, bud, dream big. And animatronics, you wanted to have animatronics.
Which, like, I can see not people not knowing what animatronics are. Those are, like, at theme parks, those robots that, you know, they freak a lot of people out. But I thought they were so cool. It was like, fake people who are robots? Wow, that's amazing. And I really wanted to get into that.
So
and,
he like, wanted to study animatronics, learn animatronics. And this is like, I don't know how old you were, 8, 9, 10.
Pretty young, yeah.
And so it's like, we're talking millions of dollars here. I would even go on Google. It's like, how do you build an animatronic? And it's like, no one, they just didn't answer that question, at least back then.
Well, you know, on like YouTube, we looked it up and there were people doing very simple stuff. Now it's a lot easier. Like, I don't know if you've ever looked up how to build animatronics or theme park
Not
stuff.
Not recently.
Since there, I have. And it's like, there is like a wider array of stuff, like people building homemade animatronics and rides, quote unquote. It's very expensive to just even do a homemade something like that. But where was I going with that?
Well, it was definitely a test for me on this very thing. My dad never put a damper pedal on anything, any vision I had. And then I'm committed to doing that with you. And boy, did I feel like putting a damper pedal on some of these things. So what was the dream you finally landed on? Was around the age of 11?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, around 11 or 12, I started to like understand the concept of a career and, you know, theme park designer. You know, I've been trying for years and nothing has happened. I had a great idea. I was going to mention this. I probably should cut this off, but I was going to like commandeer an abandoned town that apparently existed. Someone told me about the concept of abandoned towns and I'm like, wow, you could turn that into a theme park. We don't have to do it in our backyard. But anyway,
no HOA
in an abandoned town. I thought they were like public domain or something. Around 11 or 12 when I sort of understood the concept of like, okay, people pick something that they do and that usually is just what consumes most of their life. I was like, okay, well, I feel like adjacent to what attracted me about theme parks was making movies. So that's sort of what I started to pursue around that time.
So again, that wasn't much easier than building theme parks.
It's a lot easier, but like still.
For a dad, first of all, when I'm hearing about filmmaking, I'm thinking of like Hollywood. That's my first default, right? And I'm thinking, oh, this isn't good. Okay, this is like a trap, if anything, and I can't imagine anything good coming out of that. But I wasn't so disconnected from some of the other dimensionality of like, the Christian space that is creating films. And it's like, okay, I do know people in that too. So maybe I could introduce Hudson to that. And so that's what led us to the Overcomer set with the Kendricks.
Right. Which and I was 13 at that time. So it was.
And that was a great experience.
It was a very good experience.
And,
and
so I was thinking, okay, if you're going to make films, I want you to have that heart. I want you to have this mindset. It's for the glory of Jesus Christ. And so we went to multiple Kendrick film shoots, went to other film shoots. You were on multiple crews. Like you were even on a Kendrick, I think if they look in Overcomer in the credits, you were on crew one day and you made the...
If you look on my IMDb page, which does exist, I am credited for helping with Overcomer, even though I was there for one day. These other people who were there, like, you know,
6 weeks,
full-time jobs, you know, probably volunteers, and they're like, they're credited, but some like random guy just comes on, some random 13-year-old and gets credited, so...
So, but we had multiple film experiences, but I could never just send you off to be on crew somewhere, which is, it's a long time, you know, 5, 6, 7 weeks, a lot of, you know, so we went to multiple film sets and had that experience. And then, but because of the fact that you were underage, we couldn't just send you off. And so I would either have to be there with you for 5 to 7 weeks, or we come up with a creative alternative, which is what we did, which is we finally were a part of a movie here in Colorado. Still a major commitment. I mean, because it was, what, 5 weeks, I think is what it was. And we were up in the mountains, though. And so I drove up and down every day. You stayed up there, I think. And you were on the behind-the-scenes crew. And it was an amazing experience to be on a film set, right, for 5 weeks. But one of the things, just describe what your end conclusion was in coming out. So here, your dream is filmmaking, and now we finally give you this opportunity, and then...
Well, it was a great set, just like full disclosure. Like the people working on the set were great, and the director is an amazing friend of ours, and he's a, you know... And a lot of people said this was like the best set they've been on in like all of their film career. But I personally did not have a great time because I think I realized through this process what attracts me to filmmaking is just telling stories and not the process of, you know, showing up on set every day. Working,
building a film.
Yeah. That's not as enjoyable.
Well, it's not
to
even
me.
It's not a chronological process. So you're not really telling the crew itself is not telling the story. They're helping someone else tell a story.
Exactly. And so at that point, it was basically just like what would be equivalent to an office job, aka nightmare, because it's like my what I want to do is tell stories that impact people, and aiding someone else in a very, very technical sense to tell their story, I think is great. And it's a beautiful thing to do, but it's not what I wanted to do as a career. And just being on that set, which it was a very low budget film and it was $5 million. And I realized that if I want to make the movies that I want to make, I'm going to need a lot more money than this, because this is a low budget film. And that was $5 million. And I don't even have, you know, access to, you know, 1/100th of that. So,
so in that process, I think is this chapter six did we make it to chapter six? I think we're in chapter six. We have one more chapter after this for those of you that are trying to gauge where we're at in this, but this chapter is called Being a Dad. So Hudson has a filmmaker dream. What's a dad supposed to do? Well, okay, I want to help him with his filmmaker dream, even if though that's not my backyard. That's not what I know anything about. And so in the process, it was an interesting thing for me, even as a father, after all that I'd invested in Hudson over multiple years, giving him these opportunities, and he was very well connected. And then suddenly he's just like, you know what? I don't know that I want to do filmmaking. He loves films,
right?
But I don't know that filmmaking, it doesn't mean you won't in the future.
Oh yeah. Well, if one of the, you know, filthy rich Ellerslie audience people wants to donate multi-millions to me, you know,
to one of your stories,
I'll take it. You should probably, you know, do what Jesus said and give it to the poor, or, you know, but you
are
could.
You classified as the poor? Is that what you're saying?
Well, maybe. I really shouldn't be, but technically I don't have a ton of money in my bank account right now. So theoretically.
So this is a key pivot point for you and I. And this is actually, I think, one of the most special things that has happened for us is in this process of you saying, you know what, I actually just feel like I want to write stories. I want to tell stories. You were also in the Pilgrim Musical Theater. You were traveling around the country, and you're like, I love theater because I tell a story every night, the whole story. I'm not just a little piece of a story.
As an actor, I felt a part of the creativity, which is what I didn't get on the film set that we worked on. No offense to that film set and its crew or whatever, but like I didn't feel a part of bringing the story to life. I just felt like a guy working a job that was also very hard. But with theater, you know, acting on stage, it's like I'm a part of bringing this story to life every night. And it was also cool I this is maybe getting ahead of us, but like being in a theater, like it's such a physical, like communal type of environment. Like film, it's like, you know, you watch it, you know, on your phone, in your bed, you know, all by yourself. That's not always how it is, but like that's oftentimes the medium.
It's not always a community.
It's not a community thing most of the time. But theater, you're in the same room as the audience and you can interact with them at the end. And this being a ministry production, it was really cool to actually see fruit of my labor as an actor, even though it was a small part. Mm-hmm. There was just a lot of things that I really enjoyed about doing that show.
So key moment, describe the transition of your storytelling career. Just sort of give everyone a little peek into that and then how you and I are going to sort of unite. It's like one of these key moments in our story, our movie. You know, the music swells.
Yeah, it probably doesn't work for the narrative, but this actually happened before all this happened. I was still like going into film, but I was like, okay, I just want to work on my storytelling skills. Is this where I talk about that one project? That isn't mentioned here. But yeah, I was, I think like 14, 15, 16 working on this feature length Lego stop motion animation, because I did a lot of Lego animation when I was in my teens. That's what I spent most of my time on. I was working on a feature length script that was like my senior project and like my magnum opus and my grand like finale from, you know, making these Lego movies, which were very important to me at the time. And it was called Galactic Experiment, about a guy who, you know, goes to space and does who knows what. And I was like really confident in my ability as a storyteller, and I submitted it to review to some of the people I looked up to, and, you know, very kindly, they were just like, hey, this needs work. And that just totally shattered me, because I saw everything that they were talking about and realized how much work I needed to do on this script. Additionally, I didn't figure out how much time and money this would actually take. It would actually end up taking about 3 years working a full-time job to animate a Lego space movie all by myself. And just sort of like, it was a very humbling experience, because I was very proud and also just very like, yes, I love telling stories. I'm very good at telling stories and I can tap into like deep emotion and stuff. But what I didn't really realize is that what I was good at is having vague, abstract, artistic ideas that in my head are very good, but I didn't understand the practicalities of bringing them to life. And at the age of like 16, I was like, I really need someone else to bounce ideas off of and to help me ground these things so they make sense and so they're digestible for other people and not just abstract, theoretical, cool stuff, but when you shove it into a story, doesn't actually work at all. So that's when I sort of brought the idea up to you. It's like, why don't we explore collaborating on some of these random concepts.
I had always wanted to work with Hudson, and every time I would bring up something, it usually was not greeted with a tremendous receptivity. It's like, hey, what about trying this? And it was never really that, we'd never really found our rhythm.
I was very protective of my own creativity, which I, looking back, I think was very, very unhealthy. Obviously I was a teenager, but it, you know, so it to a degree comes with the territory in the natural fleshly disposition. But I was very much, had a strong emphasis on my own artistic pursuits and having my own vision. And so it was very hard for me at that time to sort of get rid of the pride and let you help me. And I think it was one of the best decisions I made creatively, because we can talk about it, but it sort of helped me learn how to actually do that thing of taking the abstract and making it make sense, making it impactful, and making it good.
So key moment in our relationship, key moment in this whole storybook thing, is somehow we have this conversation. It's like, what if you take one of your story ideas and then I stick all of my expertise in storytelling and in book writing, and we write a book together.
Right.
And I think it was probably somewhat scary for you. It was unknown for me, because we had never had a lot of success in that collaborative work with you, because I always felt like my ideas were dad ideas. It's like, oh, there's a dad idea there.
Right.
And so, but I tell you what, one of the most special things, if not the most special thing I've ever worked on, is that product that we had, Hoodlum, which we started 3 years ago. We technically finished it two years ago, right? After 1 year, because we did the audiobook 2 years ago. And then we decided, you know what? If that beginning is a little complex, it's a very, very big story. It's very good though, guys. If let's put the graphic up on the screen too. This is the book. We're planning on releasing it this winter. So, you know, if you follow Daily Thunder, I'm sure we'll have something else that we'll tell you about it as it gets close. But this story is such a classic Hudson situation. It's like, okay, give us one of your stories and then we'll write it together. Well, what story does he give? But, and if you see the subtitle on the thing, it says, what,
a time-traveling Robin Hood misadventure.
A time-traveling Robin Hood misadventure. Give what you told me.
Well, so originally, it has deviated from this quite a bit, such as, you know, that's how the creative process worked. But originally, the idea was medieval superheroes, which became Spider-Man meets Robin Hood, like the Legend of Robin Hood paired with Spider-Man as a, you know, mythological character. And which is an insane concept. That's where I was at the time. I was like, well, I wrote a really bad script and I really have all this creativity inside me. It's like, let's just make the most insane thing ever. And you have to remember, you agreed to this. Like there were some other...
Well, we weren't writing it for an audience.
No, we weren't. No.
We were just writing it to practice storytelling together. And it was a father-son adventure that we were going on together. And it's really good. That's what's funny. It's not... I mean, the title or the concept itself might sound totally bizarre to people, but if anyone reads it, they're going to probably be, you know, having tears. It's a dramedy, which means you're going to laugh your head off and you're actually going
to
have moments.
Which is drama times comedy.
Yes. Drama plus comedy. It's a dramedy. And it is deeply moving. I was just going through the final edit because we're just finishing up. We're about to do our second version of the audiobook this next week. And Ben Price is coming to town tonight. I think he's arriving. Right. And we're going to be starting on the audiobook with him. He's a comedian from Australia, for those of you that don't
know. He's done some
He's done a lot of Daily Thunders.
So they'd probably be familiar with him.
And so, which is what we did before. 2 years ago, he came in and did the same thing. So he's been very gracious to say, hey, could you come back?
Yeah,
and we're going to do it again.
It wasn't the ideal situation for sure, but...
But it's also been very, very fun for us. This is going to then precipitate into Commissioned, which you started then this last year as our first play that we hosted here at Ellerslie. And you're going to be launching Inkling Theater at that time.
Well,
that
Commissioned
was
supposed to be a very small production. That was just like, let's get our feet wet in putting on a show. Like most of the Ludi family was in that show. I think every... kid but Reese was in,
and Reese was in the front row and
he'd always lead the clap sometimes at some awkward moments but he did a very good job being the clapper. But the rest of the Ludi family was, even Kipling, who swore he'd never act, but then we lost one of our minor actors at the last minute.
So he became like, was he Chinese? He was Chinese.
He was Japanese.
Oh, he's Japanese.
I would not do that again if I had the choice, but the past is in the past. And Kip played a Japanese war criminal with one line that he struggled to memorize, but he worked really hard on it. He was also a props master. He did very good at being a props master.
He did great. So, and that leads us to where we're at now, which is your graduation, which is the launch of Inkling Theater, which is the launch of your first... We could call it like major play release.
Commissioned doesn't count in my mind. I people get offended when I say that because a lot of people like Commissioned. I don't want to talk about my
feelings.
That's
like me with our first book.
Yeah,
Mom and I wrote a first book I never mentioned.
Right.
So I know exactly what you mean by that.
Yeah, exactly.
But what's interesting about that and how it ties in with everything we're talking about, and we might as well transition to chapter 7 and just sort of finish this. And that is, chapter 7 is called To the Legendary Dad and Grandpa. Is this show, whether we intentionally went after this or not, but the father character in it, his name is Joe Hardy. He's in a strange way, grandpa. And in a strange way, I'd say that. It's a little different personality, but the same sort of heart and fire and humor as grandpa or my dad. And I think that's profound in light of all of this, of just thinking about what he started in both of us. And what he sponsored and leaving everything and coming and serving me and giving me the vision to say, well, whatever it takes, I want to serve my children so that what they're doing can succeed and can work.
Right.
And that leads us to even this discussion. Why don't you give just a tribute to Grandpa? Just say some, declare some things, almost as if he's listening, of what you'd want him to know.
Like speak directly to him?
I mean, could. I'm just saying, just speak about him, but you could, you know, you could give a nuance of emphasis in that direction.
Okay. I would just want to tell him just thank you for the kindness that he like exuded with every fiber of his being towards me and everyone else that I saw too. Like I never saw him, you know, do anything overtly selfish. Obviously he was a human, so, you know, that comes with the territory, but I always thought of him as a very selfless person. And I think that influenced me. As I'm getting older and I'm 19. As I'm like coming into that big boy pants or whatever we're calling it phase, I'm like looking back on my life and realizing that I have been very self-centered and looking to the people who I feel like exuded the opposite of that, like what I strive to be, like, you know, Christ-like. I feel like Grandpa's very high on the list, and I would love to have told him that. And I hope he can hear that from heaven right now. But that, and just cultivating a storytelling brain in me and facilitating that has been invaluable. And I'm sure it's affected I know it's affected Hoodlum. I know I was thinking about certain like ways he would phrase things in the Charlie Wong and Mr. Nice comics and stuff. And he's had a big impact on me as an artist and as me as a person. So
that's neat. We should probably dedicate Dragon Mountain to.
Yeah, that would be a good idea. Didn't we dedicate Hoodlum to him?
I think we did.
I feel like we did. Yeah, it's been a while.
I don't know if it's in the book. Isn't that an interesting thought?
Is it not in the book?
I don't know. We need to check because I don't remember seeing that.
I remember recording it when we recorded the audiobook. I remember recording a dedication.
Yeah. I think it is. I think it's dedicated to Grandpa. Because that was really special.
Not too long after he passed away initially. So, and we were thinking about these things.
Yeah.
How he sort of influenced me, which influenced, you know, and you too, obviously, you're his son, but influenced the... the story as a whole.
One of the things I've said at the end of each of these is that here's a picture for each. And I don't have that for this. We didn't set this up as the typical in the chapel version of this, but hopefully you guys have enjoyed this. I think it's been very special for Hudson and I just to banter about these things. Just to process these things is very healthy, I think, to process what heritage we've been given and how we are exercising it in our generation. And it's just fascinating to think of my dad, me, you. Mm-hmm. We have a heritage, and it's a beautiful one. And let's keep it going. So, guys, thanks for listening in. And Daddy, thanks for being such an amazing man. Daily Thunder is a listener-supported production of Ellerslie Discipleship Training. At Ellerslie, we are laboring to rouse the Church of Jesus Christ out of its lethargy and build brave-hearted Christians for such a time as this. If you'd like to learn more about Ellerslie, our discipleship programs, or support the ministry financially, please go to ellerslie.com to learn more. Thanks for listening.